Welcome to Kadampa Podcasts. These podcasts offer practical solutions to daily challenges and help guide us to a happier and more peaceful state of mind. In each episode, you will find an extract from a teaching given by one of various Kadampa Buddhist teachers worldwide. All these teachings are inspired by the profound wisdom of Venerable Geshe Kalsang Gyatso Rinpoche, a Buddhist master for our time. We hope you will enjoy listening.
Happiness and suffering are states of mind, and so their main causes are not to be found outside the mind. So this is the kind of fundamental Buddhist belief. Like, if you want to know, like, what's Buddhism in a nutshell? This is it, the sentence here. Happiness and suffering are states of mind, and so their main causes are not to be found outside the mind. If we want to be truly happy and free from suffering, we must learn how to control our mind. So this is why we take an interest in observing our mind, and in particular, this paragraph I was just reading, where we need to learn to distinguish what is a state of mind that is conducive to happiness and what is a state of mind that is basically sabotaging our happiness, right? Because the topic this month is the pursuit of happiness. So this takes some reflection. And so what I wanted us to emphasize in tonight's class is something called watching the mind, which is a way in which we can observe our own, you know, different mental states and assess for ourselves which states of mind either are the root cause of my experience of happiness, or I can at least acknowledge are playing a role in my happiness, and what states of mind are sabotaging my happiness completely, undermining my efforts to be happy. So the reason why there's such an emphasis on this in Buddha's teachings is that that essentially everyone, ourself included, wants to be happy all the time and never wants to suffer. Like, we never wake up and think, oh, I hope I suffer today. I hope it's a bad day. Nobody thinks that. You know, everyone wants it to be a good day. But usually what we conclude is that's not determined by me. This is something we were talking about last week, that whether today is a good day has nothing to do with me, has everything to do with other people, right? If I encounter pleasant people, pleasant things, it's a good day, right? If I encounter difficult people, stupid people, it can't be a good day. They ruined it, right? Or negative circumstances, you know, difficult situations. We think, oh, I can't have a good day. I have to feel stressed because this is challenging. So if we really want to fulfill our wishes to be happy all the time, we have to begin to at least sort of entertain the thought that our mind is playing a role. So obviously Buddhists take this to an extreme. We're a little bit, you know, biased in this regard. We think it's completely involved. That the only person that determines our experience is us. So we fall on one end of the spectrum, right? Which you don't have to agree with. But for the sake of this class, it's worth entertaining, okay, my mind's involved, right? It's involved. I have to acknowledge it's involved. And so to the extent that I believe it's involved, to that extent, I can understand it's possible to change it. And if I change it, then to whatever extent I feel it's involved, my experience will change accordingly. So this is the whole sort of context that we're working with here. But as I mentioned at the beginning, in the first paragraph, it's important to distinguish disturbed states of mind from peaceful states, because this is really where it begins. At the moment, we don't know what states of mind are a friend and what states of mind are our enemy. We can have confusion about this. We can be confused about what will make us happy. That confusion in Buddhist psychology is called delusions. We have states of mind that distort our interpretations of things, our interpretations of ourself, other people, the world around us. We call them delusions because they distort those realities. And then we mistakenly identify things to be a source of suffering that are not. Or we mistakenly, you know, think, you know, sources of happiness or not, you know, so we get a little confused about the methods to be happy. So this is where we have to begin, is this idea of how do I distinguish? How can I begin to get to know myself? How can I begin to get to know what states of mind are present first and foremost, Like, what is the state of my mind? And what does that state of mind function to do? Does it function to enhance my experiences? Does it function to make me miserable, right? What is it functioning to do? So this is where we have to rely upon a practice called watching the mind. So we don't have to take any of this explanation at face value. We can investigate, we can test it, right? So we can test the theory that Buddha's proposing that our states of mind are playing a big part in whether we're happy or not. We can test that theory. But Buddha said that with respect to all of his teachings, he used to say, test my teachings the way you would test gold, right? So if somebody gave you gold, you wouldn't just accept it and think it was gold, right? You would take it to an expert and assess it and make sure, is this real gold or is this fool's gold? So Buddha said the same, like, test my teachings the way you would test gold. Like, you don't have to actually agree, test them. And then if they work, then great, you can understand their value. So in the same way, we need to sort of test this theory that our mind is playing, I would say a starring role, but like I said, I acknowledge I am biased in this. It's playing a starring role in our experience. We need to test that theory. So we do that through watching the mind. So watching the mind practice is essentially a lot like watching external things. I think there's a paragraph that references this a little bit later. So it says, we can watch our mind in everything we think and believe. Usually we keep an eye on what other people are doing, but it would be far better if we kept an eye all the time on what our mind is thinking and believing. So it's an interesting idea. So we take that part of us that's a watcher. Like, we all have this inner watcher. We're always watching, right? It's just usually things outside. Like, we're watching, you know, what's going on out there. What are they doing? Why are they doing that? Like, we're just watching, right? We take that watcher and we turn it in. We turn it in. And we start to watch, you know, as being mentioned here, what we're thinking, what we're believing. So there's a couple just points I want to bring up around how we do this watching. So, because we need to hit the right note, otherwise we won't appreciate the value of this practice. So we turn our focus inward when we watch our mind. We're not judging, right? It's not like an inner judger, right? That's not what it's doing, right? When we watch the mind, we're just observing, and we're trying to be more like a scientist, where we're like, okay, when I think in that way, how interesting, it leads to this experience. I wonder if I replicated it, if it would be the same. What if I thought those same thoughts in a different situation? Would I have the same experience? So it's very scientific. We're just sort of exploring. So we watch, all right, what states of mind are arising? What do I believe in this situation? But we're not getting involved. It's a little bit like, this is where we have to practice some discipline when we do this practice. We're not actually following the thoughts or the views or the intentions. We're just observing. So it's a little bit like when you get up in a plane and you see where you live. Like, say you're in a plane and you're above the city you live in, and you're like, oh, there's my neighborhood, you know, and there's my place of work, and, you know, there's where I like to walk, and there's where my friend Judy lives, or whatever, you know, like, we're looking at it, but we're not actually in that place involved in the comings and goings. Like, we can see it, you know, we could see other people driving cars and maybe people walking, and there's activity, like life is continuing in that town without us, right? We're in the plane, it's still going on as normal, but we're not involved in any of it. We're not involved in those comings and goings, but we can observe them. And we can see, oh, look, there's a traffic jam on 285 or 295. I can see it, you know, it's backed up all the way across the bridge. Like, we can see it, but we're not in that traffic jam. So the same thing, when we watch the mind, it's a little bit like we turn that watcher in and we're observing more like from an astronaut's point of view, or like from an airplane, where we're just observing our mind, observing the thoughts that arise and dissolve, trying to become aware of what kind of intention we're holding, what kinds of views we're holding, what's our point of view. We're just observing. And then we're assessing, not judging, assessing. meaning we're assessing, where does it take me? What experience does that view or that way of thinking lead to? Is it a pleasant experience, unpleasant experience? We're just becoming an investigator. We assess and we're like, oh, interesting. Along with that, this is especially important when we identify negative states of mind. We don't identify with. We don't misidentify ourselves to be any of those states of mind. So we think, I have those states of mind, but I am not those states of mind. So this is especially important because a lot of times when we normally try to acknowledge an emotion, we identify with it as our sort of way of acknowledging it. So say we have a painful emotional state. You know, we're deeply disappointed. We've been let down or we've been betrayed and it's painful. It hurts. And we need to acknowledge that. We need to acknowledge, oh, I have some hurt feelings. Maybe some significantly hurt feelings. I'm heartbroken, right? We need to acknowledge that. But what we tend to do is think, I am that. I am that hurt feeling. I am. That is me, right? So the danger in associating ourselves to be that, which especially that which we want to overcome, is that we then think, in order to overcome that negativity or that painful state, I've got to destroy myself, right? If we think, okay, I don't want to feel this way, but I am this feeling, right? We think I am it, then how do we get rid of it? Often our approach starts to become like a flogging ourselves approach, like trying to hate ourselves into a change kind of approach, which doesn't work. Why have we done that? We've done that because we've overly identified with, or Buddha would say, mistakenly identified with that negative state of mind or that painful like mental feeling. And then we think that is me and I hate it. I hate it because it's painful. So again, it's really important when we're doing this exercise and watching the mind that we don't identify ourselves to be any state of mind. So I'm not going to kind of recap too much last week, but last week we set the stage for this by relating to the kind of vast landscape of our mind being like a big empty sky where there's room for clouds, right? There's room for clouds in a blue sky. Like we're going to have rain tomorrow, right? Today it was kind of blue, wasn't it? Most of the day. Yeah. It's been a while since I went outside and now it's dark. So yeah, it was kind of blue. So there's room in that blue sky for the weather that's going to come in, isn't it? It's not like the weather coming in tonight and tomorrow is then going to destroy the blue sky. No point is the blue sky destroyed by the weather. It remains. The blue sky remains. There's space in the sky for weather. Different atmospheric conditions come together, forming, you know, weather patterns. Going to have rain tomorrow. And then when those atmospheric conditions dissipate or disperse, the weather disperses. And then what? Blue sky remains. So what's constant is the blue sky. So Buddha said that's the same as our mind, right? So our mind is like a vast blue sky by nature, clear and spacious. And then there's space in the mind, a lot of space for, you know, different types of weather, like different states of mind, clouds like passing through. Some of those clouds are destructive, right? Like a storm, like rains down suffering and thunder and lightning. Some not destructive. But in any event, it never destroys the sky. So the same way, when we watch the mind and we see different states of mind, we identify them, we try and think there's room for them, right? There's room in my mind for some painful feelings, just like bad weather, right? There's room in the sky for bad weather. It doesn't have any power to damage the blue sky. You know, the hurricane's passing through Florida today. It's not going to be that tomorrow when the blue sky is revealed in Florida that it's damaged, right? It's now damaged goods, the blue sky of Florida, because there was another hurricane. No, it remains exactly the same as before. Untainted, tarnished. You know, unpolluted. So it's the same. We need to relate to our mind that way because we often think, The negative states of mind have a power to define us, or the negative states of mind have a power to pollute us, or the negative states of mind, especially if they're frequent, have a power to defile us in a way that is impossible to change. So when we watch the mind and we acknowledge or especially notice the states of mind that disturb us or a source of suffering, we need to be very clear to distinguish it from ourselves. So we're like, we see it, it's there, right? But we don't think I am it. We just think, no, it's there. Just some clouds, right? I don't need to, you know, develop further negativity by then hating myself for them. So when we watch the mind in these ways, we observe, we assess, we don't identify with, and then we can begin to create this distinction. We're like, okay. So when we talk about watching the mind, I just wanted to break it down a little bit, because to begin with, it can sound a little vague, like watching the mind. Like, what does that mean? Watching my mind, like I'm just now, like suddenly it's vague. If we go in right now and look, watching my mind, then all of a sudden we're like, do I have a mind? Does anyone have a mind? Like, it just becomes very obscure. So we need to be very clear what we're watching. So I like to break it into three categories, because it's just more tangible, I think, in terms of this exercise. So one thing we can start with is we can look at our thoughts, right? Because thoughts are a little more tangible. So we can think, all right, watching my mind means looking at my thoughts. So we can begin by looking at our thoughts in the moment. We can look at our thoughts earlier in the day. We can kind of rewind and be like, okay. And what we're trying to see is what thoughts gave rise to what experience. Or we can do it in reverse. If we had a really poignant experience today, a really happy experience, a really unhappy experience, we can look at that experience and then try to think, well, what was I thinking? Not in like a negative, like, what was I thinking? But no, what was I actually thinking about in that moment? Because there's a relationship between the way in which we think about something and the way in which we experience it. And we can begin to see this from our own process of watching the mind. So say we notice that we're thinking exclusively about the faults of something. Say we're focused exclusively on our own faults, our own shortcomings, our own mistakes. That's going to taint our experience of ourself, isn't it? And we're going to feel not pleasantly disposed towards ourselves. Or if we're thinking exclusively about the faults of someone else, that's going to lead to some feelings or experience of having aversions for someone else, disliking someone else, having some sort of distaste for someone else. We think it's just them, that they're just distasteful or they're irritating. We don't stop and wonder, oh, maybe I'm irritable and that's why they're irritating. There's a connection there. So we just watch our thoughts and we see, okay, those thoughts are sort of related to an experience I'm having. That's very helpful to discover. Because if there's an unpleasant experience we're having, then we can come to the conclusion, the thoughts I had at the moment I was having that unpleasant experience are important to note, right? I need to note those thoughts. And maybe when I see them cropping up, not follow them with gusto, not trust them so wholeheartedly, but think, maybe I need to stop thinking about this in this way. It's not to say we have to stop thinking about everything. It's just the way in which we're thinking about it. Maybe this way of thinking about it is not helping me. It's not helping me deal with what's difficult. It's not giving me an advantage there. And it's definitely not making me happy. So I'll give you an example of this. It's a story. And some of you probably heard me tell this story before because it's a good story. So I use it a lot. So there was this man told me this story. So it's not really my story. It's somebody else's story. So he had, was probably quite a bit older now, but at the time he had a grandson who was about 6. And his grandson had childhood leukemia, just got diagnosed. He was very ill and he had to be in a children's hospital getting treatment for a number of months. And so during that time, his family couldn't see him. He got taken out of school, so he couldn't see his school friends, and he was like living in this hospital. And so the grandfather was saying that in that time, you know, they talked to him on the phone and things like that while he was getting treatment, but they weren't able to see him. And so finally, his grandson was out of the hospital, and they were able to go and visit him. And he said that on the way to see him, he was really kind of worried. I was worried about two things. You know, of course, you're worried about his health. Like, is he going to recover from this? Is he going to be healthy and well? Like, you're hoping the treatment works. But he said, I was also just worried about him, like, as a person. Like, how was he doing? Because what a traumatic experience to sort of, you know, one day be in school and at home with your family, and then the next day you're in a hospital, you know, away from all of those things. So they were just concerned about how he was doing himself. And so they, you know, went to see him, and he was with his grandson, and he was sort of asking him, so, you know, how was it in the hospital? Like, how are you feeling about it? And he was started to, like, get really excited. Like, he'd been on this massive adventure. And he's telling his grandpa all about it. And he's like, and the best thing, grandpa, is they let me pee in a cup every day. And his grandfather said that at that moment, he realized he's going to be fine. Right? He was going to be fine. Because he was thinking about it differently. Right? It was the way he was thinking about it. So for him, it was this exciting adventure. Like, he was thinking getting to pee in a cup every day was amazing. And, like, mom at home doesn't let me do that. You know, so it was the way in which he was thinking about it that impacted his experience. It wasn't the experience. Like, you could say, equally valid, you could say the experience would have been traumatic. But what determined his personal experience was the way he thought about it. And so in that sense, he protected himself from that experience being more difficult than it could have been. So I think we can all take something from that. You know, we have to sort of check when we watch the mind. Is the way I'm thinking about something impacting my experience more radically than I think it is? And then if so, it's worth experimenting with. What if I change my way of thinking? What if I get creative and think about the situation differently? It's not that the situation isn't difficult. It may very well be difficult. But how we experience what's difficult is determined by the way we think about it.
If you feel inspired by this podcast, then dive deeper into timeless wisdom of modern Kadampa Buddhism by following the link in the episode description. We look forward to reconnecting with you in the next episode of Kadampa Podcasts.